All right. Welcome to the Dennis Colazzo Show. As always, leading off, my first guest is the Honorable Luke Jones, doing great things in our community and also in the sports world. Luke, welcome in.
Dennis, how are you, my friend? Happy bye week. You know, a chance
yeah.
to exhale a little bit. Ravens sitting at 9-3, and sit back this weekend and watch the rest of the NFL play out. Certainly a great time if you're a Baltimore Ravens fan, with the way that, I would say the first half of the season, but being such a late bye, no, almost three quarters of the way through the season. So certainly lots to be excited about if you're a Ravens fan, that's for sure.
Absolutely. You know, I haven't even looked at the schedule this week. I'm pulling it up as we're talking now because I guess we should talk about the Sunday night game, catch everybody up in the scrum against the Chargers, nip and tuck game. There were moments there that caused us a lot of concern, right? But the bottom line is they won. We've seen many teams lose. We've seen the Ravens lose in the fourth quarter. It's just the way the league is designed. I don't think it's anybody's fault. Between the injuries and the referee calls and non-calls, I still can't believe the people bet on these things, Luke. How can you?
Well, hey, there are people listening right now that would tell you that either themselves or they know someone who does very, very well with it. But I'm with you. I always joke that I know enough about it to stay away from that realm. But hey, all you see now is, you know, sports gambling and sports betting and every other commercial. And the league is certainly, you know, not just the NFL, all the major sports, I mean, have leaned into it completely. But it is crazy. And I think as we go back and look at Ravens Chargers on Sunday night, for me, it was really a case of the Ravens for stretches of that game and basically every other phase of the game tried to out-charger the Chargers. Mm. But I keep coming back to how incredibly well the defense played on Sunday night. And let's face it, that's been the theme throughout the year. I mean, not that the offense hasn't been good, and at times the offense has been great, but it has been less consistent. The defense, I mean, we could go through game by game if you wanted to, Dennis. When has the defense really faltered over the course of the season? Okay, second half of the Browns game in Baltimore. No doubt about that. They gave up too much rushing yardage. They made Deshaun Watson look like Steve McNair. Okay, Marlon Humphrey got beat in Pittsburgh by, you know, Pickens on one play after the offense had just squandered so many opportunities. Eventually, yeah, the defense is going to get beat. You know, the Indy game, they gave up a little bit too much yardage on the ground. But even that game, they got a safety late in that game that felt like that should have finished it off, but they didn't. So the point is, we can point out these very isolated incidents. Fourth quarter of the Cardinals game, which was still a little more garbage time than real threat to me. But hey, they did have to recover an onside kick at the end of that game. But the point is, you can name on one hand and still maybe even have a finger or two left over the number of times that the defense has really faltered over the course of the entire season for even a quarter, you know. So whereas the offense, it's been more up and down, right? It's been some games where they didn't perform very well over the course of 60 minutes, or they perform really well and then bog down in the second half, whatever it might be. So the calling card for this team has been its defense. I think certainly I think some of the talk comparing it to the 2000 Ravens defense a few weeks back, that cooled off a little bit after what happened against the Browns. And that was always, you know, a little bit much, but I do think this is a defense that has the chance to be the best Ravens defense we've seen since maybe 2006, which, go back and look at the numbers for that group. That was a really special group that, you know, very much was Super Bowl caliber, had the offense been able to do anything against Indianapolis in that divisional round, that in that postseason. So, you know, the point is, this is the best Ravens defense we've seen since the days of Ray Lewis and Ed Reed. And I feel very confident in saying I think that's going to continue. That's not to say that they're going to have to carry them to a championship. I don't know if you can really ride a defense to a championship in the way that the 2000 Ravens were able to do that. But I certainly think this is a defense that is far more consistent, far more potent, far more dangerous, far more confusing to opposing offenses than we've seen in quite some time here in Baltimore.
Yeah, Luke, and you and I talked about this game. We analyzed it, broke it down a bit. Justin Herbert, to me, I got Drew Bledsoe vibes watching him. You know, big guy, big arm, but, and of course, Brandon Staley, I thought he was even worse at this presser than Last one just gave a lot of credit to the Ravens. Average 500 records as a coach, definitely on the hot seat. But back to the Ravens defense, that one play where Patrick Queen and Roquan Smith just smashed the Austin Ekeler. I guess it was supposed to be a screen, but those guys got there in the blink of an eye. But you're right. Then this is, and Brandon Staley said it himself. He said this was a defense playing at a very high level without Marlon Humphrey.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, that's what's been so impressive about this defense, that if someone had told you this group would have the success, it would, where they would be right now, which is going into the month of December, a 9-3, I mean, right there. And look, some people will continue to talk about the Cleveland Browns defense, and the Browns defense is really good too. And I still think there's something to be said when you're a defense like the Browns and your offense has such issues. I mean, you know, we talk about the Ravens offense, but it's, you know, it's just inconsistency, you know, at times. It's not, it's still a really good offense. Whereas the Browns offense, I mean, it's lost for most of the, they can run the ball pretty well and that's about it, right? So especially now with Watson being out of the picture. So I think there is something to be said for a defense having the resolve that you can keep that up when you know your offense isn't giving you much help. But regardless, you look at this defense and you've seen how good it's been. You would have been stunned back in late July to know that the Ravens would be at this point, but Marlon Humphrey would have missed a majority of the games to this point in the season. David Ajabo would have been an absolute non-factor and is out for the year, as we learned this week, with a partially torn ACL that was repaired. That Tyus Bowser would not have played a snap to this point. You know, you go through, Marcus Williams would have missed the amount of time that he missed. I mean, just go through, and it while it's been great, and there's nothing fluky about it. Let me be clear in me saying that. But what I just laid out, I'm guessing people wouldn't have been talking about the thinking the Ravens would be the best defense in the NFL and leading the league, and certainly leading the league in sacks. With that, and knowing that Ajabo was a total non-factor, and Oweh missed, what, four or five games, you know, four games and parts of a fifth. So it really is impressive what across the board what they've been able to do with their defense. And it really, I had this conversation with Nestor earlier in the week, and he kind of talked about Roquan Smith. And don't get me wrong, I still think Roquan Smith is a force multiplier, but I think the success of this defense runs so much deeper, so much greater than just Roquan Smith. I think what has made this defense so impressive to me is the ensemble identity that it has. I mean, perfect example, and I noted this in my 12 Ravens thoughts at BaltimorePositive.com. Take a look at what Arthur Millette did in that game. He had the interception on the Hail Mary, and I get it's a Hail Mary. I mean, it's not this massive high leverage play there. He could have easily knocked the ball down, but he got an interception, had a tackle, you know, which is a good stop on a play. And then obviously he had the pressure and the quarterback hit on the fourth down late in the game. Arthur Millette, I just said, made three impactful plays there. Dennis, he played seven snaps in the entire game. So that right there speaks to just how collaborative this defensive effort is. And let's be clear, there are Pro Bowl talents on this team. I mentioned Roquan Smith. Jadeveon Clowney's having a Pro Bowl, maybe the one
Oh,
of the best seasons of his career. Which,
he was going to be my next question to you about Jadeveon Clowney.
Sure.
Break him
And
down
we'll
for
get,
us.
yeah, we'll get to him because some interesting things about him during the bye week, you know, that we heard from Chuck Smith, their outside linebackers.
And I was going to hear your thoughts about Chuck Smith as well. There you go.
No,
You got
no
my next
doubt.
two questions.
No doubt. But, you know, you have Roquan Smith. You have Jadeveon Clowney, which we'll see if Clowney makes the Pro Bowl or not, but he certainly is in that conversation,
Sure he
right?
is.
And you know,
He's been
edge
great.
rushers and sack totals and all that.
But he's been
Yeah.
great. He's been great
Kyle
against certain.
Hamilton.
Yes.
Kyle Hamilton's the guy, Dennis, that I would say at this point in time, and this kind of lends itself to what you mentioned about Marlon Humphrey. This is no disrespect to Marlon Humphrey or anyone else on that defense. Justin Matabike, who is at double-digit sacks. I'm not so sure Kyle Hamilton isn't the second best player on this defense at this point behind Roquan Smith because of how much he does, how versatile he is, what he does at the line of scrimmage, his ability in pass coverage, you know, ability to rush the passer when he's asked to blitz. So they have some tremendous talents. Now, you know, don't get me wrong, but it really is such a collective effort on this defense. And maybe another great example of that was the example of Patrick Queen on the blitz, where it looked like he had a free shot at Justin Herbert, But he played his assignment, which was to basically set up a teammate there. Now, there is a situation where sometimes it's like, okay, you do have to open your eyes and take what's there, even if it's not exactly how the play is drawn up. But that right there shows the unselfishness of this defense. And I think anyone would tell you, well, look, these guys want to make, they want to have numbers. They want sacks, they want tackles, they want interceptions, because it's a business at the end of the day. And when they have to go, their agent has to go to Eric DaCosta or any of the 31 other decision makers around the NFL for money, for contracts. Yeah, those numbers matter. But within the context of what this team is trying to accomplish this year, boy, you just have such buy-in. So it is really a testament to everyone, the front office and the scouts and Eric DaCosta for bringing in the right players, drafting the right players, signing the right guys. The coaching staff, beginning with Mike McDonald, and as we mentioned, other guys, Anthony Weaver and Chuck Smith, and we'll get to the pass rush in a moment, as we alluded to. But it's also just the players buying in, right? I mean, again, there's so much that goes into being successful with the NFL, but guys want to be, it's a business. It's their livelihood. It's their chance to make life-changing money that's going to set up not just themselves for the rest of their careers, rest of their lives, but their kids or maybe their grandkids, depending on how successful they are. So there is inherently, there's going to be some selfishness at some point. There has to be, in the same way that anyone that, you're making, no one just works for the fun of it, right? I mean, it's your livelihood. You have fun doing it, but it's your livelihood. So for them to have the buy-in that they get, and for them that just, you see guys that step up on a week-by-week basis. And again, Arthur Millette was just such a great example of that this week. You look at the two or three splash plays he made, played seven snaps, So it really does speak to how collaborative this defense really is, how complementary it is. And like I said, it's this great ensemble cast that, at any given week, you're having guys that, sometimes you don't even call their name. And other, look at Broderick Washington, was a healthy scratch a week ago and had a sack late in this game. Not that it was the most critical play of the game, but the point still stands. So it really just is so impressive for this defense to do what it's done. And like I said, it's got its elite talents, but boy, it's such an impressive collective effort. And really, the pass rush leading the league in sacks. And I get it, Madubuike and Clowney are up there, but to lead the league in sacks, there's no TJ Watt on this defense. There's no Myles Garrett on this defense. I mean, no one is quite that dynamic. Madubuike is as close as it comes, but even him, he's an inside pass rusher. You don't view those guys in quite the same light, even if we should maybe, but just so impressive the true team effort they're getting with that defense. And it's really taken their defense from a defense that was really good at the end of last year to what's been a great defense here in 2023.
Now, all great points, Luke. Jadeveon Clowney, and I'm glad you brought him up. He's been great against the run, great at rushing the passer. And I want to give some credit to Coach Harbaugh, because they do have a culture. The Ravens have a culture of letting the guys be themselves, right? Within certain parameters. So with Clowney on the team and Mike McDonald's influence and also Chuck Smith, right? Let's talk about that. And I also want to caution our listeners that, I like Mike McDonald. He's done some great things, but anytime you get a promotion, you're moving away from your strength. And it doesn't always translate. He may be a great head coach, he may not. But we do know that John Harbaugh is a great coach, right? So I know Harbaugh's got knocked, and rightfully so, for some of those challenges or non-challenges or whatever. But I think guys like Harbaugh, they want to play for him, they play hard for him. And I think part of maybe what's happened with Clowney's resurgence here, right, rebirth on the Ravens, you got to give credit to the coach.
I mean, you give credit to everyone, but yeah, I mean, it begins with John Harbaugh at the top there. And I mean, look, and what you just said with Mike McDonald, I mean, it's so fascinating. And obviously, it's bye week, so you hear so much
Of
in
course.
terms of, okay, is Mike McDonald going to get hired somewhere else? I've heard people talk, there's some merit to the idea of if you're Steve Bisciotti and you kind of look at John Harbaugh and say, okay, I mean, John, how much longer do you want to do this? Is there something we can work out, that this is like Eric DaCosta eventually replacing Ozzie Newsome? I'll hear all that. But again, there's an unknown. In the moment, in the present, everything fits so well. And I mean, Jadeveon Clowney is such a great example of this. I mean, this is a guy who, let's be clear, and Chuck Smith made this point, other than Lamar Jackson, there's probably no one on the current roster who's been scrutinized as much as Jadeveon Clowney. And Lamar, of course, more, because you're talking about a franchise quarterback and his contract situation, how high profile all that was. But in the case of Clowney, you're talking about someone who was regarded as this epic talent coming out of college, coming out of South Carolina, number one overall pick. And his career did not play out like a number one overall pick, right? He's had a
No.
good career. And I think anyone, I mean, let's be clear, was never a bust. He Jadeveon Clowney wasn't a bust. A bust is someone who's out of the league in 2 years, and you say, oh my gosh, that was an absolute disaster. That guy was embarrassing to our organization, whatever it might be. And we've seen plenty of those, particularly at the quarterback position. But it'd be tough to look at Jadeveon Clowney compared to what he was coming out of college and seeing what his career has been and say it hasn't been underwhelming. And a lot of that had to do with guy had microfracture surgery on his knee. What, his first or second year, whatever it was. I mean, that is a kind of surgery that oftentimes will end someone's career. I mean, that's, you know, that is a tough surgery. So anyway, back to where Clowney was at this stage of his career. He was considered someone who was physical, always had the violent hands, good against the run, solid pass rusher, but not someone who's put up big numbers. Certainly hasn't been a dynamic pass rusher. You know, it never had a double-digit sack kind of, you know, never put up 15, 16 sacks, you know, first team all pro kind of season, in the way that when the Texans drafted him, they thought that's what you're going to get every year from Jadeveon Clowney. You know, we can all remember the highlights of him in college. So you have all that. You have a guy who's been with the Browns the last couple of years, ugly departure at the end of the season last year in Cleveland. And look, I mean, how much of that was him? How much of that was the organization? I'm guessing it's a combination of both. You know, I don't think you completely absolve the player, but we also know the history of the Cleveland Browns as an organization. So, you know, you kind of take it for what it is. And then, you know, the Ravens talk with them at one point. You know, they had some discussions, and then they eventually sign him midway through August. And he comes in, he talks about having wanted to play for John Harbaugh. And when you hear that at the time, you take it with a grain of salt, because any team that has a coach with any level of accomplishment, any level of tenure, they're probably going to make some mention of having wanted to play for the coach because they're trying to endear themselves to the media, trying to endear themselves to the fan base. But you look at the perfect storm. Clowney comes in. Anthony Weaver's the defensive line coach, coached him in Houston as an assistant there. So has a familiarity with him. Chuck Smith, the Ravens outside linebackers coach, has worked with Jadeveon Clowney because Chuck Smith was a private pass rushing coach for years, had worked with Clowney at very, you know, at earlier, much earlier in his career. So right off the bat, there's some institutional knowledge on what makes Jadeveon Clowney tick, what makes him good as a player, all of that. But so you have that factor. But I think what was also fascinating, and Chuck Smith laid this out, is Jadeveon Clowney's grown as a player this year. And he mentioned specifically, and I'm not going to get too technical here because, one, I'm not a pass rushing savant or anything like that, but I know that Jadeveon Clowney had tried to learn the cross chop pass rushing move for a long time. And Chuck Smith even said that he would watch him at different stops in his career and even reach out to him at times and say, that's not quite it. You know, that's not quite it. He has mastered that this year. In fact, he used that very move on the strip sack, obviously, after, you know, to end the Chargers' insanely long drive, you know, that went from the end of the third into the fourth quarter. And they don't get any points. You know, that came on the cross chop. So I think the biggest lesson for me here, and we've talked about this a lot, you know, through the lens of the Orioles with their rebuild, but this is Jadeveon Clowney having a growth mindset. And, you know, someone who's been in the league a long time, yet is still striving to get better and embraced being coached. And he's got a go-to move now. And Chuck Smith is big on that. Obviously, he's a pass rushing guy. He's been big on everyone on that defensive front having some kind of a pass rush move. Now, you know, does everyone have a legendary move in the way that you think of, like, Dwight Freeney with the spin, the way that he was like that guy that gave Jonathan Ogden more trouble than anyone, you know, talking about J.O. being a Hall of Fame left tackle. So I just think it's really impressive. And it just speaks to Clowney, it's a reflection of just what I mentioned, the buy-in for this defense, and they all play for each other. And I think it also is interesting, with Chuck Smith and Anthony Weaver. And Chuck Smith was very, that both those guys talked to the media on, I guess it was Tuesday, and they both made clear that, hey, this isn't just about me. This is also his, he deserves credit too. What the Ravens have done this year, they've kind of streamlined it. In past years, they would kind of have the defensive line and the outside linebacker separate. And, and obviously they have their full team or full defense meetings and things of that nature. But this year they've really had those two groups work together and be in the meetings together, that it's really streamlined what they're doing. So, it gives you a much more multiple, seamless pass rush where, there are times where Clowney lines up at the three technique. They've had Adafi Owe line up over the nose at times. You'll have Brent Urban or Broderick Washington or Madubuike line up at five technique on occasion, although Madubuike typically stays inside. So the point is, it's just there's so much that's gone into this. But when you have a Jadeveon Clowney, a guy who, if anyone would have, at this point in time, have not an excuse, but he's 30 years old, he's his 10th year in the league. If anyone's going to have an attitude of, I've kind of learned everything I'm going to learn at this point, it would be him. And he's still had a rock solid career, but for him to kind of have this renaissance that he's had, and to hear Chuck Smith explain it, and to hear how the cross chop, and just search on Twitter, Clowney cross chop, and you'll see some defensive line guru types that you always find on Twitter, on social media, sharing how that technique, that pass rushing technique, has been a game changer for him. Because for him, he was more of a power, throw his body around, violent hands, physical kind of guy, and that worked for him. But it wasn't leading to him putting up monster sack numbers. Whereas you look at him now, he's got 7.5 sacks. He's got a great chance to be a double digit sack guy. Although I will point out, Justin Houston was at a similar point in the season last year and wore down. So I think that's a reminder that someone like Clowney, you want to continue to manage his snaps and keep him fresh the rest of the way. But it's just, it really speaks to how much buy-in there is. And again, going back to your point about John Harbaugh and the culture, and Chuck Smith even laughed. He said, my wife hears so much about team culture and she just rolls her eyes. But, and look, it is eyewash for in many places. And it's not, every team has a certain amount of culture, right? And you still have to go out, you still have to have talent, you still have to have guys go out and make plays. You still have to have a certain amount of good fortune. You still have to stay relatively healthy. So it's not everything, but I do think what we've seen with this defense, with guys like Clowney and Kyle Van Noy coming in, in Clowney's case, right toward the end of training camp, in Van Noy's case, after the season had already started, and see the success that they're having as two veteran players who, like I said, if there's anyone who had the attitude of, I've learned everything there is to know, I'm kind of who I am at this point in my career, it would be those guys. And yet they've bought in and they've learned things and they've even grown as players. I mean, what a great example that is for someone like Adafi Owe, who
Sure.
is in year three. And let's face it, first couple of years wasn't off to a great start with his career, and we've seen him take a step forward. So it really is just so impressive, the entire defensive operation. And it, for me, it's the biggest reason why they're 9-3. And that's not a knock on Lamar Jackson or the offense. And we know Lamar is in the MVP conversation, but the defense has been so consistent week after week after week, save for a couple quarters here and there, that it's really been impressive. And it's a huge reason why this team's a legitimate Super Bowl contender this year.
Well, Clowney's having fun, clearly. The whole team is, particularly the defense, right? They're having a lot of fun. They're touching their quarterback. They're getting the reps. And I know that Clowney expressed frustration. He said when he was with the Browns, they were more concerned about getting Myles Garrett, better matchups, matching him up against the weaker offensive lineman, which, look, it's a really good strategy. But I think another big key is why these edge rushers are having some success. Justin Madubuike, right? Broderick Washington, Travis Jones, Michael Pierce, they're getting that push up the middle. And when the quarterback can't step up, he's got to escape. And when you try to escape, you got these ends crashing down on them. And because of their rotation, they're fresh, right? And Clowney's a dude. We watch him give the Ravens a hard time when he was with the Browns. We watched him give the Ravens a hard time when he was with the Titans. There was one game, I think he just spent half the game in the backfield. So they are having fun and they're playing at a high level. And it's good that Chuck Smith has been a great influence on these edge rushers as well.
No question. I mean, Chuck Smith has been an influence on the edge rushers. He's worked with the interior guys, and same thing with Anthony Weaver. Anthony Weaver is the defensive line coach, but he's worked with the edge rushers. Weaver brought up a really interesting point this week, and you and I have talked about this. You know, we've talked about this for years, and Tom Brady being a great example of this, of when you could get inside pressure on him. You know, the ball would come out so quick, so even if you had great edge rushers, they wouldn't always get to him. And there are things that you can do to account for edge rushers. You know, you can keep a blocking tight end in, you can chip with the tight end. Obviously, you have a back, you know, in the case of the Ravens, you know, you use someone like a Patrick Ricard. But Weaver made the point, and this really pertains to Justin Madubuike, but it also applies to any of their other guys when they're lining up on the inside. He just said, you know, there are things you can do to account for a guy on the edge. There's only so much you can do when a defensive tackle lines up. You know, you can try to double, and, you know, I mean, there's some of that, but you're much more limited. I mean, obviously, you want to be aware of where that guy is, and you want your quarterback to be aware. That way, your quarterback has, you know, is ready to have an answer to, you know, a hot read, whatever it is, hot route, you know, to get the ball out quickly. But when you have that pressure that's coming right in your face, where the, you know, a defender is coming at your legs, whatever it might be, I mean, it's that is a different animal than someone coming off the edge where, you know, you can step up in the pocket. You might be able to shake loose. It's tough when it's inside there and it's, you know, it's right in your face like that. So I think what Madubuike has given them, it's a different dynamic. And I think you and I talked about this even a couple of weeks ago where, you know, you kind of think back over the history of the Ravens, even with all their defensive excellence, you know, who have been the great interior pass rushers for them? I mean, Haloti Ngata at times, but I mean, Ngata was never a guy who put up
No.
big sack numbers. You know, I think you go back to 2006, Trevor Price put up monster numbers that year, but he was still more inside outside at that point. You know, he wasn't lining up exclusively as a defensive tackle in the way that Madubuike almost always is lining up, you know, as, you know, kind of a three technique. So it really makes such a difference. And again, there are things schematically you can do to account for guys that are rushing off the edge, but you're much more limited in what you can do against defensive tackles. I mean, again, you can try to double, but again, you try to do that, your numbers, and it's going to set someone else up, especially someone coming from the outside then. So I just think that's been such a different element that the Ravens typically haven't had. I mean, they've had good pass rushes in the past, but what's made this much more dynamic and much more difficult, not just the scheme, and we've talked at length about the scheme and sim pressures and guys blitzing from the nickel like Arthur Millette or Kyle Hamilton. You know, I mean, you know, it can, you know, pressure can arrive from just about anywhere, you know, with that front, especially when you're having seven or eight guys at the line of scrimmage. And even if they're rushing four, you don't know which four are coming. But I still think Madubuike's presence just, you know, it's made such a difference for them in having someone who, you know, even with all the games and, you know, pressures and blitzes and exotic packages that they run, you have someone in Madubuike who can just win inside. And they just haven't had many guys like that over the years. And there aren't many guys like that around the NFL. You know, that's why Aaron
No.
Donald has been this
No.
alien for a decade, right? So it really just speaks to, you know, the another unique factor that the Ravens have going with this pass rush and this defense.
Yeah, Sam Adams was twitchy for a big man back in the 2000 defense, but still, he was much bigger than Madubuike. Madubuike looks like a bodybuilder. But I did take a look at SportTrack, and they projected numbers for next year. Madubuike, he's 26 years old. They had him at 355, right? 3 years for 55 million, and they had Patrick Queen at around four for 66 or so. 24-year-old player, so very young still for Patrick Queen. So they'll have some cap space headaches next year as Lamar Jackson's salary accelerates, right?
Yeah, and maybe that, you know, that leads us into something that I wrote about it at BaltimorePositive.com. Yeah, look, let's shift to the other side of the football. Ronnie Stanley. I mean, we've talked about it, Dennis. I do think that right knee has been a problem for him. To his credit, he tried to get, he came back after just one game off, and because at times, look, fair, unfair, perception, reality, whatever, he's missed a heck of a lot of games the last few years. So, of course, there's frustration from the fan base, and some of that at times is unfair. I certainly think he wants to play. I certainly feel for him as a competitor, but yeah, this is an example of maybe it wasn't the wisest decision for him to try to play, and certainly Khalil Mack ate his lunch. And to be fair, Khalil Mack has done that to a lot of great left tackles. I mean, you're talking about a guy who's at least going to be in the conversation as a Hall of Fame player, if not a Hall of
Yes.
Fame player outright. So, but let's call a spade a spade. I mean, this has probably been the worst season of Ronnie Stanley's career. I mean, just using Pro Football Focus, and I get it, that is not the end all be all evaluative tool, and their grades are not gospel. But it's been rough. And I think the reality is, going back to, what transitioned us to this conversation, is the Ravens are going to have a heck of a lot of tough decisions with free agents and just roster building moving forward, because the reality of Lamar Jackson's contract, it's just there. It's not a knock on Lamar. It's just any franchise or any team that has a franchise quarterback that is elite and making elite money, you have to adjust from a roster building standpoint. And I'll say this much. You absolutely must get proper production and value from your highest paid players on your roster. And where they stand right now with Ronnie Stanley, considering Lamar's cap number is going to go up next year, and considering this boatload of free agents that they're going to have, I think Ronnie Stanley might be playing for his Ravens career the rest of the way. And now, let me be clear, it's not as simple as just saying, oh, we're going to cut him, because even in a post June 1st scenario, you're going to be taking on some money. You're going to take on a heck of a lot of money pre June 1st.
Yes.
So, the best case scenario within the realm of realistic, understanding he's going to be 30, and I'm guessing the ship has probably sailed on him becoming the guy, getting back to the guy that he was in 2019, for example. And also understanding that the injuries probably aren't going to improve when you get to the wrong side of 30 if you're someone who's subject to a lot of injuries. But the best case scenario is probably Stanley getting that knee in a better place over this bye. So, and that's why I asked John Harbaugh this question. And John flat out said, look, it hasn't been great. Ronnie will probably be the first to tell you it hasn't been great. He's got to get that knee right from a technique standpoint, from a bend standpoint, being able to anchor, all of that. So it's not as though anyone's just saying Stanley's just bad now, and that's just who he is, but he's dealt with the knee. He's got the ankle that's cost him basically two full seasons going back to 2020. So they need to see a better version of Ronnie Stanley. And that on a couple levels. One, if they truly want to maximize their Super Bowl potential, that's not to say that they can't win a Super Bowl with Ronnie Stanley not playing his best, but it's like the Mark Andrews thing, right? A better Ronnie Stanley makes things easier for you, in the same way that if you had Mark Andrews, things would be easier for you. And knowing that he's not going to be back until best case scenario late in the playoff run, if they get that far. So they need a better Ronnie Stanley to maximize where they want to try to get this year. And you need that. You'd like to see that from a decision-making standpoint, because the best case scenario is probably him playing at least one more year. Even if you're looking going into next year's draft and saying, you know what, let's try to find our franchise left tackle of the future. Maybe we'll play it like the Ravens did way back in 1996. And Jonathan Ogden was drafted. And where did he play his rookie year, Dennis? Left guard. That could solve a problem at left guard for 1 year. You have Stanley for one more year, can mentor the young guy. And then, you see where you are at that point. But if they don't get a better version of Ronnie Stanley than what we've seen so far in 2023, I think you need to bump up the urgency of that succession plan. So, I think, again, going back to, where I kind of took this conversation, you have all these different guys that, let's face it, they're not going to be able to keep everyone. I mean, they're just not. I mean, I think they're going to try like heck to keep Justin Madubuike. But if you do that, there's no way you're keeping Patrick Queen.
No.
There's no way you're keeping Geno Stone around, who, deserves a start somewhere. I mean, that's just where it is. And Marcus Williams, to his credit, has played really well, since that first game back where there was the concern about his tackling. So you're not gonna be able to keep everyone, but you do want to try to keep some of these guys. And if you're looking at Ronnie Stanley, he's not a $20 million, he's not playing anywhere close to a $20 million left tackle. I mean, I still think, to be clear, because I've seen some conversation about this, he's still their best left tackle. Patrick McCary's been better at right tackle when he's filled in than left tackle this year, though McCary played very well back in week 2, to his credit. But Stanley's still their best left tackle. He still has the most upside. But Dennis, the fact that we even have to say that is a major problem with where they are from a value standpoint with Ronnie Stanley. So, I think there's going to be a lot of scrutiny. A lot of, the Ravens are going to be watching him closely. John Harbaugh didn't hide from it. I mean, they know Ronnie knows he's not playing very well, So it's nothing personal. And I'm empathetic for all the injuries that he's gone through. I mean, that ankle injury, that stunk that happened. And there's no way the Ravens could have foreseen that. Certainly, it's not something that Stanley wanted to have happen 2 days after he signed that extension. But here we are 3 years later, and there's a significant value problem with Ronnie Stanley. So, if he plays better the rest of the way, I think you still probably plan to have him on the team next year. Maybe you can try to rework the deal a little bit, make it a little more cap friendly to help you sign some other players. But if it's much of the same the rest of the way, I don't know if the Ravens are going to have much of a choice but to kind of pivot and see about bringing someone else in. And look, not saying that you're going to find someone that was as good as Ronnie Stanley 4 years ago, but I don't think you, especially when that's the guy protecting your $260 million quarterback's blind side, you're going to need better than that over the course of the next couple of years. And I don't know if Ronnie Stanley at this point, I don't know if he's up to that, especially at the compensation level that he currently finds himself. And it's just, there's a value problem there. And when it's been as problematic as it's been, hey, they're still 9-3. Let me be clear. These are still relative problems, but I think you still got to look at it in terms of where they're going roster building wise. That, to me, unless he's better down the stretch, that's going to be very problematic going into the offseason with all these free agents.
Yeah, there's Andrew Voorhees hanging around again. Hopefully he's healthy in 2024. Deep draft for offensive tackles, deep draft for cornerbacks, two areas of need for the Ravens. So hopefully they'll straighten it out. But for this year, his injury, when he goes down, certainly shifts the balance of the offensive line. Mark Andrews goes down, shifts the balance of the entire team. And we saw that, I guess the performance against the Chargers was to be expected by the Ravens offense, given that you're missing such a huge piece of your offense in Mark Andrews, right? Lamar Jackson's safety blanket, his go-to guy in third down, his go-to guy in the red zone. So Lamar has to go on living without Mark Andrews for the rest of the, perhaps for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, you can't play the rest of the season expecting Mark Andrews to come back. I think from a
Sure.
mindset standpoint, if you're Lamar Jackson, if you're Todd Monken, you have to be planning as though Andrews isn't going to come back, because that's not considered a high percentage. There's a chance that he could come back maybe by the AFC Championship based on, some of the conjecture that's been out there. But he had surgery. He's on IR. He's certainly not going to be playing the rest of the regular season. So they've got to figure it out. And I think what was a little discouraging is, again, relative, they won, right? I mean, they were able to get the running game going when they needed to. They made enough plays, but they did have the extra rest coming off of the Thursday night game. So they had, and hypothetically, Todd Monken had a few extra days to prepare. And let's also face it, I mean, this was not a good Chargers defense. I mean, this is a lousy Chargers defense on paper. And I give them credit. And look, they still have Derwin James. They still have Khalil Mack. So I don't want to completely say they're devoid of talent, but we saw what Jordan Love did the week before against them, for example. So from that standpoint, it was a little discouraging seeing them not be able to have more success in the air. And look, they did some early on. I thought Monken and Lamar did some nice things in terms of, for example, getting the ball to Isaiah Likely in space. I don't think this was a, for me, what I'm talking about here isn't Andrews being out and Isaiah Likely was a disappointment. It's the entire operation. We talked about this is going to have to be a collective effort of four or five different guys stepping up, and Lamar Jackson having to step up his trust level in some other guys. That's just where they are. You can't, this isn't as simplistic as Isaiah Likely steps in for Mark Andrews and everything is peachy dory, like it's hunky dory, it's, they've got to adapt. So from that standpoint, you kind of look at what, how it played out, 4 of 13 on third down. They were 1 of 2 inside the red zone. They were unsuccessful a couple times on fourth down, and we could certainly, the direct snap to Gus Edwards, that to me was a little too cute. But at the same time, you go back and look at it, looked like it was there if it was kind of run correctly. But the point is they do have some work to do on that front, and I think that's, for me, one of the biggest questions I have for this team for the post-bye stretch. Beyond talking about, Stanley, as I mentioned, beyond talking about, like, the running back position, Keaton Mitchell, do we see him start to become a bigger, what happens with, the defense in terms of, do they break the franchise sack record? Do they, what's it look like with Marlon Humphrey coming back? Like, some questions like that. I really do look at the passing game, and they do need to find a little bit higher level of consistency, higher level of efficiency. I think you kind of look at, and I don't mean Lamar, I mean more the offense in general, but you kind of look at since that Detroit game where they were just amazing, as incredible could be offensively in that game, it's been a little more up and down. Arizona, not so good offensively. Seattle game, really good. That reminded you of Detroit. Cleveland game, up and down. Cincinnati, it was good. This week, not so great. So it's been a little choppier on that front. And look, when you have a defense as great as the Ravens defense, okay, and they look, they've won what? 6 of their last 7. So it's not as though they're not in great shape. But if you're looking through the lens of January and understanding how tough the rest of the regular season schedule is going to be, let alone getting into January where you're playing a good team every single week or a great team every single week, they do need more consistency with that passing game. And the first, they did a great job adapting against Cincinnati when Andrews went down, obviously early in that game. But their first full game lesson, or first full game test, I should say, without Mark Andrews, it was a little choppier. And that's to your point, probably should have been expected. Although I would have liked to have seen a little more against, again, not a very good Chargers defense, but it certainly there shouldn't be any complacency, at least as it pertains to that, going into the bye week. So that's where Todd Monken and T. Martin and Keith Williams and George Godsey, all the offensive assistants going into bye weeks, and all right, how is this passing game going to evolve? Because obviously without Mark Andrews, it's different. Again, it's not as simple as plug and play Likely for Andrews and everything's fine. So, there's going to be some evolution that's going to have to be at work here. But, the running game's been good to excellent. Passing game has been really good at times, but it hasn't been as consistent. And if there's, the biggest area for me for this team between now and getting into the playoffs is, you've got to find a higher level of consistency. And that doesn't mean Lamar throwing for 400 yards every week, but when they are throwing the ball, you do want to see some improved efficiency. And you've got to find, who that, how you're going to replace that Mark Andrews production. Again, Likely's part of that, but for me, maybe it's Zay Flowers becoming a little more of a sophisticated part of this offense from a route running standpoint, maybe a little less underneath for him, and maybe pushing the ball downfield with him a little bit more. It's going to have to come somewhere. Bateman, Odell Beckham, it's going to be a collaborative effort. But that really is, for me, the biggest question for this team as we come out of the bye week. And again, it's not against a specific opponent, just wanting to be more consistent week to week on that front, because hey, you're, at some point in time, this defense is probably going to have an off game. We've been saying that, and it probably will happen at some point. So if that's the case, you want your offense to be ready to, in the same way that the defense was ready to step up when the offense had its issues against the Chargers on Sunday night.
Of course, and as the Ravens have a bye this weekend, we'll see the Cardinals and Kyler Murray as they're hosted by the Steelers, right? And then The Browns travel to the Rams. Perhaps Joe Flacco starts that game, and the Bengals at the Jaguars. So we'll be rooting for all the teams against our divisional opponents. Luke, with that, please tell our listeners where they can find the social media, all the great stuff you do for Baltimore Positive WNST, your blog, and everything else that you do.
Absolutely. I encourage everyone to follow us on Twitter at WNST. You can follow me personally at Baltimore Luke. Check out my blog at BaltimorePositive.com, sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. As I mentioned, a piece on Ronnie Stanley. I'll have more on Jadeveon Clowney and some of the Ravens outside linebackers. Check out my 12 Ravens thoughts, and I'll even have a piece over the weekend, questions for the stretch run. I mean, this is a Ravens team that is 9-3, currently number one in the AFC, although probably by the end of the weekend, probably won't be, but because of tiebreakers and assuming that the other three lost teams don't all fall this weekend. But Ravens are in a great spot. But yeah, they do have some questions the rest of the way and some fun questions, such as Lamar Jackson's MVP candidacy. I'll be pondering all that at BaltimorePositive.com. You want to be on the WNST Baltimore Positive text service sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore. If you are, you get the final injury report of the week, game day inactive sent directly to your mobile device 90 minutes prior to kickoff, any significant local sports news sent out via the WNST Baltimore Positive text service sponsored by Coons Ford of Baltimore, and of course, anything throughout the week on AM 1570 with Nestor. Ravens players and coaches interviews, including interviews with some of the Ravens assistants, Chris Hewitt, the secondary coach, talking about Kyle Hamilton and Brandon Stevens. And we mentioned Chuck Smith, Anthony Weaver, T. Martin talking about Lamar Jackson's development as he is putting up, another very strong season at quarterback for the Baltimore Ravens. Check out all of that at BaltimorePositive.com.
All right, my friend, always insightful, always informative, always hard hitting. I appreciate you, Luke. You have fun this weekend watching the other games, and we'll reconvene at the same time next week.
Yeah, I encourage everyone to have a nice, fun, stress-free football weekend. Hey, because it only the intensity and the anxiety only grows from here as the Ravens come out of the bye week, and it's a bear of a final 5 weeks. There's no doubt about that. Even the Rams looking a little bit better the last couple of weeks. So certainly not a game to sleep on there with Matthew Stafford, but plenty of excitement. So rest up, because these next couple months could be very fun, but also very nervous as we get closer and closer to January.
Yep. We'll be Cardinals, Rams, and Jaguars fans for about 3 hours this Sunday. But Luke, I appreciate you. And with that, we'll take our next break here on 1570 AM WNST. We'll be back right after this.